a living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
Welcome back, Taxation is Theft, and I have with me today Tony Kirk, who is an active police officer, a former police chief, and he's working right now on his PhD in criminology. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing? Appreciate you having me on the show. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us, especially because there's between myself and some of the people I associate with and yourself and some of the people you associate with, there's kind of a divide in between us. So thank you especially for kind of getting over that and talking. But what's really interesting is that before we even talk about that stuff, you're already involved in LEAP, which is one of the biggest issues that, you know, a lot of people have with the police is their enforcement of drug prohibition. Why don't you go ahead and kind of just introduce, talk about LEAP a little bit and what's your involvement with LEAP?
Well, a few years ago, at that time, we were just looking into medical marijuana here in Missouri. And LEAP, at that time, was called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition and headed up by Neil Franklin, who's a former drug enforcement officer from the city of Baltimore and also the Maryland State Police. Honestly, at that time, I was just barely interested in the idea of medical marijuana. I was still very much into the whole process of it being illegal. I was had not bought into the idea of prohibition being an issue and how much that brings to the table. You have to remember, as police officers, a lot of times we come to the idea of enforcement with the, I guess, the morals or standards that we're raised with and the area that we're raised with. And a lot of times we don't see a lot of, different opinions or alternative views of this. At that time, I had a chance to meet Neil Franklin. And Neil, to me, and one thing that a lot of people can, agree on is that when people work in your same field, you a lot of times can empathize and sympathize with things they went through, the outlook of things that they have. Neil started talking to me that night. We met prior to a meeting that was a fundraiser for New Approach Missouri, and had an opportunity to meet him and sit down with him for about an hour ahead of the meeting. And it was kind of a come to Jesus type of moment for me, because it really opened my eyes to a lot of things that Neil talked about, because we had, again, a shared experience, especially in drug enforcement. He had worked in drug task force. I had spent much of my time in that. And while speaking to him, I started hearing stories about problems that we have now in policing that have come from the drug war. And I started researching it myself. And I have to be honest, at that time, I had never really looked at the negative aspects of it and seen where we are today. And one of the things I really enjoyed talking about Neil was that he was able to kind of open my eyes to that. And it gave me the chance to really look into LEAP and see what was going on there. Within a day or two, I joined LEAP. And honestly, I kind of stayed in the closet a little bit about it. Neil approached me about being a public speaker for them, and I didn't really feel comfortable at the time. About 2 weeks later, though, John Payne, who headed the campaign here, Amendment 2 in Missouri, which passed for at least medical marijuana here, was doing a public debate with a gentleman who was a lieutenant for a sheriff's office here in the state of Missouri. And at that debate, I heard him, pretty much provide so much false information to the public that I felt that it was my duty as a law enforcement officer to actually contradict some of the stuff that he was saying. In other words, I felt that he was just kind of pushing a lot of reefer madness to keep the idea of the drug war going, that I, at that point, even from just my perspective, I could see was wrong, just the false information was being provided. So I spoke to Neil again. I came out publicly in support of LEAP and the whole aspects of full legalization. And at that point, actually started to open my eyes to ways that we could change criminal justice reform, especially in this field. And for the last, five years now, I've been very public about it. When I joined LEAP, I was the only active police chief that was on the board of the speakers that was still on duty. And that was one thing that LEAP used to catch a lot of grief about, was it was police officers who were retiring and then kind of coming to, speak out about it. And for me, I think that was good because it opened a lot of doors, being an active police officer. But at the same time, it also, opened a lot of eyes to police officers who were still on the job, and that was able to allow them to start speaking publicly about it as well.
Awesome. Yeah.
And of course, a big move. And of course, for those of you that are looking up LEAP now, the name was recently changed to Law Enforcement Action Partnership. And people have asked, well, is that to get away from the drug war aspect? And no, it's actually what we're trying to do is push more of the ideas of reform that have, if you look, you know, I look at the idea of the drug war as being like the Kraken. And humanity is kind of like on the ship, and this Kraken is attacking. And all these tentacles that we see are tentacles or bad vines that have come out from the drug war. So we started addressing, you know, mass incarceration, racial disproportion of arrest. You know, it's a whole ballpark of ideas now that have sprung from that are now bad. And changing the name kind of gave us an opportunity to start addressing those things, whether it's, you know, just full legalization to actually needle exchange programs, pre-arrest programs for diversion, things like that. So it's really allowed us to get a lot more people in on topics that they also wanted to address. And I think it's really been a big game changer for us.
Wow, that's really awesome. So when you say that, like, you heard other officers talking about giving wrong information, do you think that there was with any in particular, or, you know, is there a mix of officers who are intentionally giving wrong information because they somehow benefit from having, you know, extending the war on drugs or having, you know, more arrests? Or do you think that a lot of them are just kind of regurgitating the same bad information that they heard from somewhere else, from some other study?
I think it's honestly a mix of the two. And two examples is this is, once Colorado legalized, we started seeing the Rocky Mountain high-intensity drug trafficking reports out of Colorado, which were very biased. A lot of information was left out in their statistics. And that, to me, is people keeping their jobs. The DEA needs that continuing arrest. They need those numbers. They need that money and budget money from the federal government. So that's one aspect of it. The other part, too, is if you look at it generationally, policing is changing. And it's not just one, the feedback from the community, which is a huge thing, in fact, that we have to answer to the communities we serve. But also the other aspect is it's a generational difference in the fact that a lot of officers, for example, myself, I'm in my late 40s, Generation X officers are really kind of starting to change that somewhat. You're seeing a lot more millennials are coming into the police departments, are very more open to that idea. They're starting to see the ramifications of bad policing. And I think Generation Xers are now starting to take more of a leadership role now in police departments and sheriff's offices. And they see that more as well. We're seeing more of the people, like, for example, over 50, baby boomers, you know, still carry that reefer madness idea. And that is part of, I guess, their moral standards or codes. And I always tell people that moral standards and codes are like fingerprints. No one has the same one. We got to quit going to this idea that we have this contract with society or anything like that. Each independent person operates off their own moral code. We can't keep judging people on this supposed standard that we have. And I think that the older generation of law enforcement now is starting to fade off, just as we're seeing now in voting. And that's just how they were raised. That was the mentality they were raised. I was raised in a very conservative southern Mississippi town. If you weren't Baptist, you weren't anything else. You know, if it was a drug, whether it was beer or marijuana or whatever else, it was wrong. But as as we grow older and go through our experiences, we learn from these things. So I think it's both. I think that there are people still out there pushing that information because their jobs rely on it. I think that some of them just feel that it's to their moral code is still justified as well. And I think that's why I tell a lot of people that when we address criminal justice reform, that we have to learn how to speak to that audience. And as a libertarian, I attended the national conference. I'm a lifetime member of the Libertarian Party. You have to learn how to get that message across. You can communicate all you want, but part of the communication is sending the signal. Making sure that person receives a signal in the way that you sent it. And I think that that's when the Libertarian Party has worked on. And I think that that's something, hopefully, that we at LEAP are working on as well, that we can actually start changing the minds of some of these younger officers. And I think part of that is through the training that we see now.
Interesting. So I guess with the changes that we see in policing, So we see all these videos that come out all the time, and and it's easy to jump to the conclusion. And there are a lot of people who say, you know, they say ACAB, ACAB, which is all cops are bad, or some other variation of that. But it's, you know, if you look at statistically, there's how many police officers in the country, and maybe one of these videos comes out every week. And of course, you know, we understand, okay, yeah, there's probably more than that, but still, that's a very small percentage. But a lot of times I think we see that some of these are younger officers that are doing these things. A few examples that I can think of. So do you think that, that maybe some of the younger officers are coming in and they have less training and they're kind of more gung-ho about, you know, doing certain things that are breaking the rules and causing more trouble, like planting drugs or, you know, excessive force or that sort of thing?
I think it's two things. One is we've had a society within policing or culture within policing that for so long we were judged by arrest numbers and ticket numbers. And that's not something that may have just actually generated within law enforcement, but actually from the government. For example, you know, in the DEA or U.S. Customs, you were judged by how many cases you opened and closed, how many arrests you made. You know, our annual reports were based on, you know, how much weight of marijuana we seized, how much weight of cocaine we seized. So there was that drive that the only way to be a good police officer is to produce those numbers. You know, we see instances, and again, like you said, there's like 500,000 police officers in America. You know, if you have 500,000 people, you're going to have some bad apples. You know, luckily, I've worked in a lot of really good places, you know, almost for 25 years now. Now I've worked in internal affairs. I've had officers that I've seen go to federal prison. So there are going to be bad ones. There's always going to be bad ones. You know, we have school teachers are bad. Medical doctors are bad. What we have to do is start making sure that the community, the people we serve are seeing that that's not what we're trying to do, that we're trying to, you know, work a clean operation and, you know, forgive us when we do make the mistakes. I think the problem is right now is that these instances come to light now more through social media, which is good. I mean, we don't want this hidden. We need this to be out front. We need to be able to address this with people. And, you know, whether it's saying, hey, we have to quit ending quotas, arrest quotas, weight quotas, whatever you want to call it, get those out, you know, end those, and start addressing individual problems, because you don't want people thinking that we're out there trying to write tickets. We have to arrest people to get those numbers up. And then secondly, we have to change what I call the culture of policing. For so long, we have taught police officers that we're at war with everything. You know, and even as a country, we're at war with everything. We're at war with poverty, we're at war with crime, we're at war with drugs. And one of the best things I ever saw on TV, and this kind of goes back to Neil being from Baltimore, is I had never seen the TV show The Wire. Heard people talk about it, and you know, it was a big show that everyone kind of was really influenced by. I finally got a chance to sit down and watch The Wire, and within two episodes, I was enthralled at how well it represented what goes on within government, not just at the elected level, at the school levels, and then also at the police levels. When you look at government, and you look at schools, you look at churches and policing, you're looking at major social controls. And that's one thing I love about criminology is you look and see how people are controlled by the social aspects around them. And if you're teaching police officers to constantly be at war with something, you're teaching them to be soldiers. And you can take that too far. And there's a scene where Bunny, the lieutenant with Baltimore, comes in and has his young sergeant, and he's speaking to him. He's pretty much saying, hey, look, I can get anybody to go up there and grab people off the street corners, and within a day, they're going to be replaced by somebody. And what he was saying was that, hey, you're not a warrior, you're not a soldier, because what happens is eventually the area that we serve but just becomes occupied territory. And to me, that was one of the best quotes of any TV show I ever saw, because it really showed or told what was going on in policing, is that we were not developing community peace officers, we were developing soldiers. And that's pretty much where we've been the last 10 years, is that we've been developing soldiers in the police academy, because we have told them that they're at war constantly.
Right. And that, I mean, to that point, aren't there a lot of, I don't know how true this is, a lot of former military that return from deployment, they come back and they start looking for jobs, and that's kind of the first thing that opens to them. So we have a little bit of military training in the police force itself.
And what has happened is, so for example, I entered law enforcement in 1992. So when I first started in Biloxi, Mississippi, I was one of probably four officers out of close to 100 police officers with a college degree. And that's really telling. I mean, even in that age, I mean, you're talking the early 1990s, to have four or five out of close to 100 police officers with college degrees is very concerning to me, because you're wanting police officers to be able to react and have a state of mind and intelligence level to be able to present cases and present arrest data to people who are attorneys. These are people who go to college for 4 years and then go to law school for another 3 years. So you have guys who may have high school degrees, maybe have some college, and you're wanting them to be professional, like say a doctor or a nurse or a school teacher, all of which require college degrees. And that was one thing I really started trying to address in my career as I went up through the rank, was to try and impress upon chiefs, especially chiefs associations, that we really need to start looking into combining, for example, police academies with colleges more across the United States. There are some places that are doing it now. Southeastern Missouri here, actually, you can graduate with your bachelor's degree and from the academy at the same time. I think that that gives police officers a better background in constitutional law. It gives them a better idea and the idea of sociology and criminology and looking at that. One thing that we don't talk about enough is criminalistics is evidence-based policing. George Mason University has a really good evidence-based policing program. And what that, to me, as I found out going through my master's program and now PhD, is we have a lot of fantastic academic research in policing. The problem is you turn around and turn that academic research, a 35, 40-page research paper, over to police chiefs who may or may not even have, you know, an associate's degree. We don't know in policing how to use that academic information on a everyday, day-to-day basis. And now, though, for example, at the University of Missouri St. Louis, you're seeing a lot more retired police officers that are getting into the program. And what I want to do now is be able to turn around and say, hey, look, we need to learn or teach, especially police executives, how do you turn that evidence-based policing that we have good academic research on into something that we can use day-to-day? At the same time, go to the academic field and say, hey, here's why or why this may not work. And like you said, the problem is for years that we recruited directly out of the military. I've heard time and time again that people said, hey, you know, I want somebody that served 4 years in the military because one, they understand policy or procedure, and two, they follow orders. And the last part is kind of scary because right. At some point we have to start teaching police officers that you can question laws. We're not just robots. You know, it's not, hey, this is law, we're going to enforce it no matter what. At some point, ethically, we have to be able to question that as police officers as well.
And that's one thing that I like to point out a lot is that typically police officers are taught procedure and not the law. Like I've been in my little confrontations with the police where, you know, one particular one in Texas, he threatened to arrest me if I didn't show him my ID. Not knowing that the failure to ID law, actually, you have to arrest somebody before you can charge them with failure to ID. Yeah. That's in Texas. It's like they have a checklist. They stop somebody in a car and they go through a checklist. And if something doesn't fit that checklist, they kind of don't know what to do. Because I was driving without a license for 10 years and I got stopped by the police all the time and without license plates. And that's not something they know too much about. So they go, you know, they go down their checklist and they get stumped. And it's kind of funny to watch them because it's like their brains don't even turn on to think, okay, what does this all mean? They're really just like, you know, hey, okay, this, I don't know what to do. What's next? What do I do? You know, asking for the next orders, asking for like a change in procedure because they're stuck and they can't continue. So it's really interesting to see that. But of course, you know, that's where you get to like the order following and, you know, enforcing unjust laws, unconstitutional laws. Now, I do kind of want to ask this because it's my impression that in a police department, you're an officer is an employee, so they kind of have to follow the orders of the chief. And the police department works for a city, so they might be under orders of the mayor. But a sheriff is an elected position, so he's kind of got a little bit more freedom in what policies he wants to enforce or how to, you know, how to do that. Of course, his deputies might be, you know, they're kind of his employees, so they might have to follow orders a little bit more to what the elected sheriff wants. But is there anything in that structure that you think maybe officers should be taught to think a little bit more and understand the laws or have some more freedom in deciding what they should or shouldn't be enforcing?
Yeah, I think that you have to allow for police discretion. You know, there's a lot of times where people say, well, you know, every time police officers see somebody, they need to make an arrest because there's no, you know, bias. But honestly, you don't want that. I mean, you do not want officers to not to be able to have that discretion. I think the biggest problem, like you stated before, is that honestly, and this is something that I will say against the Republicans and Democrats, is that you can sit there and tell me all you want that you you know, think that we police too much or that we need to reform this. But every time we elect somebody from the two major parties, what's the first thing they do? Make more laws.
Right.
And, you know, you're talking about now where you've got so many traffic laws, and we know as libertarians, we hear this all the time, is if I want to pull you over, it's not going to take me long to find out a reason. And if you keep piling these laws on there, eventually, not only one, do you have one, the opportunity to be stopped for anything. Two, an officer is overwhelmed by the amount of laws that he has to learn. And in some states, the police academy is only 10 weeks long. I mean, you know, that's silly. You're literally putting people out on the street after 10 weeks of training, a little bit of field training, and you're hoping they know all the laws and at least a resource to get to them and to be able to act in a proper way. I think that's, you know, insanity in 2019. But, you know, you're talking about elections of sheriffs. There's been a lot of debate sometimes whether or not, you know, police departments, a city chief, you know, for example, Missouri years ago, the city chief was a marshal and he was elected. I'm very torn about that. I'm very torn of whether or not I would want to see that always be an elected official. But with sheriffs, though, and I've had a chance to work with a really good one here in Missouri recently, I think that if you have the right people and you educate your voters, I think you have a lot better chance of getting better people into those positions, because in a city government, you are a lot more tied up to the political system than you are as a sheriff. I mean, if I'm a sheriff, I can pretty much write policy, dictate policy as much as I like. You know, as a police chief, I answer to a board, I answer to a mayor, and that is, as a mayor and a board struggle, then that also comes back onto the police department. So you get all that interference as well. So I think there's been a lot of great sheriffs I've worked with, and I think that a lot of times you see a lot better relationship from sheriff's departments because of that reason, because I think there's a better tie to the sheriff. You know, a lot of times you may never meet your police chief, but at least during the campaign season, the sheriff's out there. Right. But yeah, I think that's... You know, like you said, I think there's a lot of times where officers are overcome with the amount of laws that they can write. They get, you know, confused on how often they're changing. At some point here in America, and again, I ran for Congress as a libertarian last year here in Missouri, and I told people that I would never vote for a new law unless that law was to actually rescind other laws. At some point, we have to start, you know, getting back off of prohibition. And again, going back to the two-party structure, you know, Democrats will attack policing, you know, at will, but then as soon as something comes up, they want police to be used on their side. I mean, we have to be honest. If you boil it down to the nuts and bolts of it, each party is going to use the police department as the militant arm of law enforcement. And whether it's, you know, today we had a Democrat congressman out of Florida, and she wants us to start charging people for making fun of or making comments about.
I saw that.
Online. And I mean, it's
Free speech is gone.
Yeah, I mean, I told somebody today, you can't, you know, we see the attacks by Antifa, you know, up in Portland and other places. You know, at some point we have to, as Americans, have to start calling out both parties. That's one thing I like about libertarians is in the big picture, we can step back and see the hypocrisy of it all. And on my Facebook page, I actually called people out today about it. You know, on the left, you can't complain about the Klan, and you can't complain about the right wing when you have people dressing up in all black suits, attacking people who aren't even part of a protest. I think that not only we as police need to start looking at the culture that we're living in, but I think we as Americans have to start saying, hey, if you want a law passed, at some point you have to be willing to kill that person if they break the law. And that's, I think that's a real thing to look at. And I think that it's not just, you know, we always say, well, the government does this, the government does that. You know, we are the government. We're the voting people. And at some point, you know, hopefully more of us will wake up to that idea, especially as libertarianism, and see that. And until you get a grasp of realizing that laws are prohibited, that if you pass one, it's just because 50% plus one believes it doesn't mean it's a good law. I mean, slavery was a law, but it wasn't a good law. And we see that now.
Right. That's really interesting what you said. I'm just thinking about if you pass a law, you have to be prepared at some point to kill somebody, because it's, I mean, like, even if it's, you know, the blinker thing, like somebody didn't, they made a left turn and they didn't use their blinker. Okay, so you pull them over, you give them a ticket, and if they say, well, I don't want to sign that ticket because you're basically trying to get money out of me, I don't want anything to do with that, now they're resisting, and it's escalating, and then what are you going to do? You're going to arrest them, and then, it escalates. Like, well, I don't want to be arrested. This is nonsense. This is stupid. And then it's, okay, well, if you're not going to come peacefully, I'm going to take out my taser, I'm going to do, and, you know, it can absolutely turn into somebody killing. And what's really frustrating to see is when that does actually happen, so many people will take the opinion that, well, he should have just complied. He should have just signed the paper or gone with the officer peacefully, done everything. And even sometimes then we still see somebody ends up getting shot. You know, they're following all the orders, they're complying as best they can, they still get shot. What do you think about that? Like, what's kind of a solution to that, considering that there are so many laws? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that, you know, for us as police officers, we have to start actually telling people that, you know, there's a lot of laws that get passed that law enforcement never actually has any input into. You know, a lot of times you'll hear, for example, here next door to us in Illinois, they just passed a ton of tax increases that just took into effect in July 1. You know, and people will say a lot of times, well, you know, our elected officials passed it, you know, and they'll act like they didn't have anything to do with it. Well, yeah, you voted those people in. And at some point, we have to realize that, hey, if you don't want those laws, then vote for people who aren't going to pass that type of laws. And, you know, for me, it's saying, you know, we have to quit somehow believing that the government is a separate entity than we are. We can't control the government. There is no, you know, people say, well, it's government paid. You know, for example, free college will be government paid. It's not government paid, taxpayer paid. You know, the government's not a business. It's not making any money. It's stealing money. And we as people have to be able to address that. And for example, policing, you know, at some point we have to say, hey, not only do A, we're not going to vote for people that keep passing these type of laws, and B, if we keep seeing that type of enforcement, we're going to defund the police departments. We're going to shut those down or back them up, you know, one way or the other. And, you know, for me, I kind of look at myself as a minarchist on the way to, you know, a better idea of even less laws. You know, the more you can kind of delegate down, the better. So it's kind of like, a means to the end, to work down to a society with less laws. But until we start saying, the bad point for us as libertarians is, unfortunately, the last few years, there's such an even greater polarization between the two sides of the left and right that you can't even get them to understand that now. You know, and for example, we're basically cheering on vigilantism whenever we see groups like, you know, we're seeing now instances in Oregon and other places. And to me, it's kind of hard for me to address culture of policing when we're actually seeing an even more degraded humanity and the people that we're serving. So, you know, for us, it's, you know, for me, it's like, hey, I want policing to change and be less violent. But at the same time, you know, hey, y'all got to change your ways, you know, as well, because it even makes it worse, because now you have people that get elected on the left that immediately they come in and say, hey, we're going to force these laws this way. And, you know, we hate the police, but you know what? You're going to arrest them now because it's our turn to be in charge. And I think that puts us in a very difficult position as police officers. At some point, we have to be able to not just educate policing, we have to educate the people to see what these laws are doing to us.
Right. Yeah, that's a really interesting point. At the same time, like, it's very difficult to educate a public who ultimately, you know, most of them don't want to be educated, or especially not on this. Like, they're happy to be educated on, you know, every player that's on their favorite sports team, yeah, and their entire history and everything. But when it comes to politics, and I used to be the same, it's politics is boring until it somehow directly affects your life. That's when, you know, but of course, that's also when, you know, when it comes along and slaps you in the face, you kind of get emotionally involved. And I think that's where a lot of the violence and, you know, violence is an emotional reaction. You know, I think that's kind of where it comes from, because they're not prepared for the things that they're experiencing now, because they did refuse to be educated about it, or maybe in their public schooling, they weren't forced to be educated about it. So yeah, it's really interesting to see all that. What do you think about, so a lot of people will say that all cops are bad because they have taken an oath to enforce all of the laws, even though a lot of the laws are bad. What do you think about that?
I hear that a lot. I mean, that one thing, when I retired and took a couple of years off to get into the PhD program, you know, I looked at a lot of these, challenges or aspects of policing, especially views of policing. You know, one thing you're talking about, confirmation bias is a huge issue in our society now. I mean, no one really looks at exterior views. That's one thing I liked about when I left the Republican Party, when I left policing for a little bit. It allowed me to step back and kind of really see a lot more of the big picture. And I think that's what we're, seeing right now, is that people don't realize the harm that, like, for example, the drug war causes, the harm of not allowing free speech. And what we've done is that we've pretty much said, hey, if you don't operate within our standards of thinking, then, you know, we'll either arrest you, we'll just beat you publicly, or, you know, some other aspect, you know, some other avenue to take. But I guess, you know, for me, when I hear people say that, you know, there's some truth to that. I mean, at some point, you have to realize that when you take an oath, there's going to be some laws that you don't agree with. To me, though, as a police officer, I question my, and I'll say, well, is it a law that's depriving someone's right that I truly believe is constitutional? And then how much of, I guess, officer discretion can I use? So for me, the last few years of my law enforcement career, what I tried to do was change as many laws as I could. And one thing you have to learn is, much like doctors or teaching or anything else, you have more power when you work within that industry, when you work within that career. So for me, when I came back into policing, it was like, hey, I'm going to be part of this organization while I'm still working on my you know, postgraduate degree. And what allows me to do is allows me to attend these meetings, allows me to attend closed door meetings that I wouldn't have a say so in otherwise. For example, in one of the cities I was chief at, we actually decriminalized marijuana down to where it was a basic $100 ticket. You were read a ticket, you were on your way. Now, was that legalizing it? No, but I did as much as I could under state law at the time. And I think that that's why I tell people now is that as a libertarian within law enforcement, I try to recruit more people into that line of thinking and say, hey, as a police officer, you have that ability to be on the street and to have that discretion. And also, as an acting police officer, it gives you opportunity to, for example, meet more politicians at your state capitol, to have closed-door meetings with them, to speak at committee hearings, and it carries more weight. So I understand that. I mean, a lot of people say, well, you should retire, stay retired, because, you know, if you're in the field, it kind of dirties you a little bit. But I think at the same time, though, for me, it's like, hey, we as libertarians need at least a voice within all aspects of society. And if we're wanting to scale back policing, we need to have people in policing that are proposing that are wanting to scale it back and scale back laws. I mean, we have to admit that it's going to be hard to change a segment of society from the outside, and we see that all the time.
Right. And I think that's a really good point, too, because you have some level of authority in of knowledge in saying that you work in this particular field. Whereas, yeah. You know, if I were to come in there and say, yeah, we need to police less, everyone would just look at me like, well, what do you know about policing? You've never, you know. So, I think that is a really valid point. Even though we're saying the same things, your point carries a little bit further, and it carries to other people who would identify with you as other officers.
Well, I mean, think about it like this. If you were trying to reform healthcare law, you're going to have doctors and nurses talk about it. If a state senator here in Missouri wants somebody to come and talk about, improper roadblocks or NHTSA doing roadside sobriety checks for, you know, surveys or whatever else. You need somebody who's going to counter the old drug war policy. And I think the best example of that was when we were testifying for full legalization here in Missouri. I testified right after the same lieutenant that I spoke about earlier. And he talked about all the horrible stories of the drug war. And I came in and had a total opposite view. And pretty much what happened afterwards, and even during the committee meeting, was there were committee members that said, hey, we're now hearing two sides from law enforcement, two sides from policing. And what had happened for decades, only one side was being heard. You know, we have to increase policing, we have to increase drug arrest, and they bring in all the police officers, you know, that supported that and talked about this drug war. And of course, oh, well, we have to do this for the public, it's for public safety. And one of the congressmen that was in there, or I guess state house members, he said, you know, after hearing you, I don't know what to believe anymore. Not that I don't believe either one of you. The problem is that now my testimony was contradicting his, and it pretty much canceled it out. No longer did he have the ability to come in there and, you know, ruffle up his feathers like a peacock and strut around without anybody challenging that. So I think that that's good that we have more people in law enforcement now that are challenging the drug war, that we're challenging mass incarceration, we're challenging, you know, roadblocks and all this. And for me, that's what's winning for us right now. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's the public perception and the community involvement now within criminal justice reform is huge, but having that inside ability to change it is a benefit that we didn't have in the past. We didn't have that ability to, you know, years ago, let's say 10 years ago, if I'd have came out and said I was in favor of legalizing marijuana, I'd have been in the mayor's office the next day and been fired. But luckily now we have a little bit more freedom to do that. And we have more, I guess, elected officials that are allowing us to say that now as well.
Right. I wanted to ask, I wanted to ask this earlier. We're like way away from this topic already, but I did want to ask. So, you used to be a chief of police. And now you're still a police officer, but you're not chief.
Yeah.
Did any of that have to do with your involvement in LEAP or becoming outspoken against the drug war or anything like that?
No, actually, when I came out for LEAP, I actually contacted my mayor at the time, our city prosecutor, and our city judge. And at the time, they all actually support legalized marijuana, which for me, I was in a position probably not too many chiefs have ever been in to have all three actually favor as well. So I had a very open ability to go to places like Utah and Kentucky and the state of Alaska. I was able to actually campaign with Norm Stamper, the former chief of Seattle, the week or two before the election there when we passed legalized cannabis there in Alaska. So actually, the last three or four of my years as a chief were probably some of my best times due to the fact that I was able to be open about these topics. And I got a flood of emails and phone calls from officers all over the country that were interested in LEAP, but they never knew before that, one, there was an organization like that, and two, they didn't feel safe coming out and saying that. And people a lot of times kind of doubt that when I say it. They don't really believe, police officers don't really believe that. I'll tell you now that a growing minority, and it's probably getting close to a majority now, police officers support legalized marijuana and support a lot of other things being legalized. For example, behind closed doors, you'll hear a lot more police officers that are in favor of legalized prostitution. One of the things I speak out now about is I'm very fearful that the current ramped up war against the sex trade, I think, is actually just a diversion of funds and enforcement away from policing of narcotics to policing of the sex trade. And don't get me wrong, I think anybody that's forced into the sex trade, that's wrong. I mean, you know, right. Human slavery is human slavery. A consensual act between two adults is business. It shouldn't be regulated any more than anything else. So you're actually starting to see that now. And I think, again, it goes back to the idea that prohibition is an issue no matter what it is. So I tell a lot of people, say, you know, hey, have faith there. You know, criminal justice reform is just like drug reform. It's a marathon. And we're not, you know, right now we're not at mile one, but we're not at mile 26 either. So we got work to do. And like I said, I think right now, learning that message as libertarians to be able to deliver that, not just to voters, but also be able to present that to police officers, people who may be on the fence, is huge. It was a libertarian that first came up to me and asked me about the drug war. And he said, well, you know, what's your biggest concern about legalizing marijuana? I said, well, you know, I'm scared that more people will start using it. And of course, it's a gateway drug. It'll go on to meth, heroin, whatever else, because that was still my belief at the time. And he said something to me. It was very profound. He said, if marijuana was legalized tomorrow, would you smoke it? And I said, no. He goes, well, pretty much not too many other people will. He goes, because people who want to smoke marijuana already smoke marijuana. And when he said that, that was a big bright light came on, because it was true. I tell people that now, you know, no one's sitting around waiting for marijuana to be legalized. Now, you may have some people who try it here and there, but people who want to use it are using it. And I think to me, that really kind of brought it home that, like, hey, wow, you know, we probably aren't really stopping anybody from using it at all. And I think that we see that now more with a lot of other things. And really and truly, LEAP, you know, has offered me the opportunity to talk to a lot more experts in it. And like I said, I've been amazed. And I think that that's really a big thing we need to work on as libertarians and, you know, anybody in reform issues is learning how to get that message across. Because I think there are people who are wanting to hear it. And I think that it's just a matter of getting them to be able to come out and being able to have them publicly come out in favor of it as well.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, I'm further away from police in the tax industry. I'm very outspoken against taxes. And, you know, I really find the same thing. I find a lot of people that, you know, kind of in their heart, they're like, every time they see their paycheck, they're like, oh, my God, all these taxes, like, but they're afraid to say anything because, like, I've met so many people that, and I used to feel this too. If I even say publicly, hey, taxes suck, the IRS is going to come knocking on my door. Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know where it comes from, but like, it's like this phobia that's implanted in our brains. That's like, hey, we better just keep quiet when we're, you know, when we see a problem with this big system that's out there. There's a question that I get asked a lot, because of course, you know, I'm running for president and I want to end the drug war. And as you mentioned, there are so many people whose jobs kind of depend on it. What would you say to police officers who are, I like to call this survival mode, right? Because when you're feeling through, even libertarians, if you're hiking through the woods, it starts snowing, nightfall, you're lost, you see a cabin, it's illegal to break and enter, but you're going to because you have to survive. You're in survival mode. Morality kind of goes out the window. If, you know, if the same thing applies to somebody, you know, whose entire career is in jeopardy, like, hey, if we end the drug war, you're gonna be out of a career. You're gonna have to find a completely different job in a completely different industry. What do you think you could say to someone like that to say, it's what we have to do? Or, you know, how do you help them to understand that transition is necessary?
That's huge. I think what we have to realize when we're talking to people like that is a lot of people's job is the image that they project. It's very much of their, you know, their ego, part of who they are. Whether you're an architect or professional football player or police officer, you know, now you've got police officers who, like me, have 20 years of service in, and for their entire career, they were praised, you know, about how they've got all these drug arrests. You know, they were winning the drug war and being, you know, held with accolades of all their arrests, amount of weight. And when you attack that, unfortunately, a lot of people take that as an attack on them personally. I think what we have to do is a community of people. And if you read Robert Peel's police philosophy that goes back, you know, a couple hundred years, Robert Peel mentions that the power that the police have comes from the community we serve. And if that community doesn't accept that authority that we have or doesn't grant that to us, then we have to accept it. I think that's what we're seeing now, is that the community we serve, whether it's a city or a county level or federally, are now starting to question how we do that and actually probably the laws themselves. So at some point we have to be able to look at people and say, hey, this is not a attack on you. And I think that that's one thing that I've learned speaking to police officers, is that we have to quit saying that all cops are this and massing, you know, cops in general is a big group, and start looking at people as individuals and say, hey, this isn't your fault. This is how 20, 25 years ago we trained you. And in some degree, we have to say us as a culture. And again, I know libertarians say, well, we didn't. But as a culture, 20, 25 years ago, we taught police officers to be this way. And what we're saying now is like, hey, we appreciate the time that you dedicated to the community, but now we need to go a different direction. You know, the world has changed, the community has changed, and police officers have to start realizing that enforcing the law is a reflection on the community. It's not a reflection on our personal opinions or us as a person. And I think that's a big lesson that I learned, was that when you're speaking to police officers, you have to be able to speak to them as individuals and not as a group. You know, I've known dirty cops. I've been part of arresting dirty cops. You know, there's a gentleman just recently got a federal prison that I helped put away. But when I go to another police officer, I don't address him as that individual. I have to find out what it is that he got to law enforcement, you know, why you got into law enforcement, how are you serving the community, or what do you think your role is as a police officer? And you have to teach them that you have to address that reflection back on them. And you have to kind of like roll with the punches and go with the waves. And I think for too long, we've had people in police academies and in training situations, they're still teaching the policing aspects of 20 years ago. That's one thing I wanted to, you know, again, like you talked about earlier with the academic aspect and the college aspect, quit training police officers to be, you know, soldiers, and start training them to be peace officers, somebody that actually can relate and sympathize and empathize with the community that they're part of.
Yeah. So it's, there's, so a couple different thoughts I'm having, you know, first is, you know, you say that the officers are representing the community but you also have, like, in some places where you have an extremely large community, like, let's say, like a big city like Los Angeles, where you might have police who are tasked to police a certain neighborhood, and they might not be from that neighborhood. Or maybe they are from that neighborhood and they personally dislike a certain group of people, like, you know, because, oh, they're turning this into a bad neighborhood, they're hurting the property value, something like that. Is there something that makes that a little bit more difficult, for whether it's for communication or connecting, or that, you know, is there something where we should make sure that police who are policing a neighborhood are from that neighborhood, kind of like how we have, you know, when you elect a state representative, they have to live in your district, that kind of thing? Do you think that would be any sort of help to moving things along?
Well, I've lived in the two cities I was chief at, I actually lived in the city limits, and some of the other places I lived, I didn't. I was able to live outside city limits, and nothing against the city I served at the time. It was just either closer for my wife at the time, or bringing a person I was living with at the time. It was just convenience sake. I think it's kind of limiting ourselves if so we have to only hire people who are of a certain racial type or a certain gender or from a certain person or place, and start saying, hey, you are representing that community and you need to learn that community and be part of that community. For example, even if you're a white police officer from a rural area of Missouri, if you get hired on in the city of St. Louis, you're going to be patrolling areas that are, a lot of times in the North City, vastly, minority areas. And you're not being sent in there to clean it up. You're not being sent in there to change it to some aspect that's fitting to your individual moral code. What you need to do is you need to teach police officers to find out, and this isn't just street level officers, this is a problem with middle management, even some police chiefs. The police chiefs have to get out of their offices. They have to be able to get out of that office, get out of the mayor's office, and start being on the street, doing community events, going to town halls. The reason why I say that is for 25 years now I've been in law enforcement, and it seems during that time the police have stopped answering to the public and just directly to those mayors and the boards. And in a way, what has happened is mayors and the boards have also become more egotistical and saying, hey, we are the people. We were the people that were elected. You'll answer to us. I've seen police chiefs that have taken write-ups. I've seen police chiefs that have been fired for making public comments that didn't go through the mayor's office first or didn't go through the city's PIO first. We have to say as police chiefs, like, hey, I need to get out in the community. I need to see what, at that street level, people are really wanting from us, this true community leaders. I don't count mayors and city councilmen as community leaders. I count people who are in control of the social control aspects, teachers, principals, church leaders. I mean, even if you're an atheist, you have to realize that churches are big in some communities, and you have to realize that those people know a lot of that feedback. Get on the street and just regular business owners. At some point, we have to do that. And I don't think that it's been an issue in some places, because in some small towns, you know all the people. But right now, the baddest instances that we have a lot of times are in large major cities, and that's why is that we have made that to a paramilitary organization that doesn't answer to those people. And I think that the only way that we're ever going to rebuild that trust in the community is being able to be people that that the community can walk up to and talk about. And if we don't know what's going on at the street level, then we can't help. We can't help fight crime. We can't help people feel protected by police. We can't get that cooperation with them. So we hear community policing all the time. It's a term that's honestly kind of played out a little bit. You can talk about it, but unless you're actually out there doing community policing and being a peace officer, not a police officer, I think that we're never going to gain ground.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important distinction that you just said, the peace officer versus a police officer. A lot of people recognize the word, police is like they sometimes call them policy enforcers. Which is, they're looking for crimes that are, don't have a victim. And here's the thing, I know lots of anarchists who just want, completely get rid of the system. But when they see the police arresting a murderer or, some big criminal a thief, rapist, pedophiles, especially, they're like, yeah, let the police have their way with them. It's like when the police are actually doing things that we can all approve of, arresting actual criminals who are harming other people or pose, I don't want to say pose a threat, but who are actually harming people or have an imminent threat to somebody. Even the people who are most anti-police are typically like, they'll say, okay, well, that's okay. Funny that at the same time they'll say, okay, well, that's just one good thing that they've done. Let's look at all the other stuff. So there is kind of a balance there too, but it's interesting to see all that. And it is interesting to see that, that there is kind of a shift going in that direction now, so that, maybe in, I don't know how many years, we could start shifting that direction where we aren't looking at victimless crimes. We aren't looking at filling up prisons that way and everything else. So I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, I think right now you have to balance your time in law enforcement, how much money you earn, how much resources you can put towards different crime aspects. And I think for us in law enforcement, we have to start saying, hey, crimes against persons, direct victims is what we need to be targeting. Unfortunately, if you go back to, for example, my day and age growing up, Miami Vice was a big TV show. And since that time, we've always idolized the narcotics officers, whether it's a movie or a TV show. It's always pretty much based on the narcotics officer. You know, we have a lot of crime scene shows, but let's be honest, it's neat, it's scientific, it's kind of fascinating, a lot of stuff we see in CSI stuff, but that's not the adrenaline that people want to, you know, get involved in. I mean, for example, you mentioned military people before. Nobody in the military leaves the Marine Corps after 4 or 5, you know, 8 years and says, hey, I want to dust fingerprints all day. You know, they want to kick doors, they want to storm the hill, go into the valley, whatever else. And what we need to say is, you know, you were talking about earlier about, you need to go to a police officer, he's been there 15 years and he's a narcotics agent, and say, hey, we're going to back off the unit. We're going to take X amount of men out of the unit now. And we're going to put these officers in other details. You know, put them in sex crimes, you know, and work sex crimes now. You know, having a task force that can go in and, you know, clean up old homicide cases. You know, the amount of sex crimes that we have solved every year is, you know, incredibly low, and we don't invest nearly the amount of resources into it. And it's like you said, I think a lot of people are minarchist in the way that they want to say, hey, there's going to be a need for policing for some time. I mean, let's face it, we're not 4 years away from not having some type of you know, police force. And what we need to say is like, hey, we're, you know, as a police chief, as a mayor or whatever else, we need to say, hey, we're going to put these resources towards crimes where someone's actually hurt. Not worrying about people's, the siding on their house. You know, you literally have police departments now that are writing what used to be ordinance tickets that was handled by like an ordinance officer for siding not being the right color or the siding not being washed or high grass. You got police officers that are spending time out there every day over simple violations like that. I mean, the amount of calls that we get daily for people cutting their grass too early or putting their trash out the day before, it consumes a lot of time. And I think, again, that goes back to what I said before. Honestly, a lot of people didn't get in this job to worry about people's grass. They want to be able to go after a murderer or catch a rapist. You know, the last year alone, I've worked a couple of cases where 14-year-olds were raped. And to solve that case is a lot better and fulfilling to me than worrying about catching a guy with, you know, half a gram of weed and a one-hitter pipe. You know, who's really the big victim in that? And instead, you know, you can actually put that time resources to finding out, you know, hey, can we catch the guy who raped this 14-year-old girl? And again, reflecting back on society, we have to quit telling people that, hey, if you have a problem with your neighbor over what time they cut their grass or they parked 6 inches away from the curb, that's not a police matter. That's something we should be able to figure out between each other as citizens of Earth.
Go talk to your neighbor.
Exactly. You know, I handle, you know, and honestly, let's be totally honest. It's 2019. 80% of your time as a police officer is dealt with civil issues that should be going through attorneys to begin with, or just basic complaints that aren't even criminal in nature to begin with. You're basically an adult babysitter a majority of the time that you're on duty.
Right. I say that so much. Like, you know, just government in general, you know, when people have an issue, they say, hey, let's pass a law. And it's always like, you know, let's pass it at the federal level. So everybody has to obey it. There ought to be a law. And it's, you know, you're looking for, it's like as kids. And I think this is actually like some training that's given to us, you know, when, hey, if somebody pushes you, you don't push back, you go find an authority figure to, and you know, rat them out and like the teacher will come and decide what to do. That's kind of what we're told as kids, right? Cause they don't want us escalating fights on the schoolyard, which is, you know, it's a good intention. Yeah. But that kind of trains us in that same way. So now it's like, oh, like you said, my neighbor's cutting the grass too early. I want to call the police or they're using a gas powered lawnmower. We need to ban those. They tried that in California.
Plastic bags, you know.
Yeah.
Plastic bags, plastic straws. And again, when you go back to like society standards or social standards, in a country like ours now, the more that a country becomes integrated, you know, whether it's different races or nationalities, we have to give up on this idea that there's a one-size-fits-all system. And when I say that is, you have some people in the community, for example, I was raised in a rural country area. If you got hit in school, you hit somebody back. You know, your fathers and mothers taught you to defend yourself, and you hit somebody back if they hit you. We were never told to run away and go tell a teacher. In areas where I lived at now, that's very common. You know, if somebody hits you, you go tell someone. In other parts, you know, you don't hit them there at school. You wait till you're back home and you go to their house and you know, you take care of business. So again, it's, you know, you have to realize is that if we're going to say that policing is a reflection of the communities we serve, you have to realize that it's very divergent. I mean, there's, you know, again, it's very easy to be a police officer in an area that's 99.9% one religion or one race or whatever. And again, I think that the good example from a lab, if you want to say like a scientific lab, would be look at the cities and look at the crime rates and the crime response and the policing. Major cities all across the United States are having major issues with hiring, retaining officers, policing practices in general, because every time a new mayor comes in, every time a new board member comes in, they have their own personal agenda. And you can't do that with a city of 500,000 people or 200,000 people that's now not just, you know, 90% white, it's maybe 49% white, it may be, you know, here in St. Louis, X amount Bosnian, Biloxi, X amount Vietnamese, and expect that all of them are going to have that same moral standard that you share. And it's like you said, across the line, most people say crimes against persons are a thing. We want to stop rapists. We want to stop people who murder. You know, I want to stop people from, you know, stealing other people's property. You know, to me, one of the best books I ever read was a really good libertarian lean, in fact, that said that, you know, basically you don't hurt people and you don't steal their stuff. And that's what law should be. You know, if you're not hurting someone and you're not stealing their stuff, then it should be an issue. But we've gotten this idea that everybody should act like we do. If I believe it should be against the law, you should too. I just need half of the people plus one to go along with it. And unfortunately for police officers, you'll have 50% plus one that like the fact that you're enforcing that, but now you have 49% of the people who don't like the fact that you're enforcing that. Right. So again, as you become more polarized as a community, and we're seeing that now with the right and the left, policing honestly is in a very bad position because we're not going to be able to satisfy but about half the people. And, you know, again, if you want your police to reflect how the community is, then you better hope it's a good community, because if not, you're going to have bad policing because, you know, you're so polarized as a community. And that's not, I guess, pushing the blame out, because there are ways that a police chief can kind of stop that from happening. But I think, again, as a community and as a nation, we have to start addressing that ourselves.
Right. So I have one more question for you before we wrap this up. And that is, you know, we do see a lot of police doing bad things. I just saw one, it was today or yesterday. I guess he didn't know his body camera was recording and he was planting drugs on someone. Yeah. Which is, you know, and how often does it happen that they're actually not recording and they do plant it and get away with it? But when they do get caught, we often see that sometimes they get fired, sometimes they get administrative leave, and then they're back on the job. Some things that they do are worse than others. Some get violent, some plant drugs or set up crimes or just harass people or make threats. And sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes they get fired. But very rarely, I know you talked about a few cases where they do get prosecuted. And maybe it's just public perception that they aren't being prosecuted as often as they should. Is there anything that we can do, or what is the issue with, you know, these officers who are criminals? Why are they not prosecuted as much, or is it just a perception issue?
Well, again, I don't think that the numbers are as high as a lot of people, I guess, would like to present them are. I mean, there's dirty cops out there, and there's too many. I mean, one's too many, you know, but let's be honest, there's always going to be some. But what we have to do is, in the policing community, is one thing, again, people always hear this thing, well, you know, the person was put on, you know, vacation for 3 months while it was investigated, and then they were finally fired, or they finally quit, or whatever. One thing I'm not a fan of is police unions. I tell people all the time, you know, unfortunately, I've seen officers that got fired because they arrested a city alderman or arrested the mayor's, you know, cousin. And that's what brought about police unions, is there was that unfair advantage that the elected officials had. But I'm against policing unions and the fact that you see that it's a lot of times unions protect people that shouldn't be protected. And I've seen that as a police chief. I've seen that working in the field. I'm not a fan of those. I think as a police chief and as a community, the number of complaints that are filed on officers each year should be public. I think that the exoneration number should be public. I think that whenever an officer is arrested, I think that, you know, for years that was kind of hidden or kind of like put behind the back or behind the curtain, because the city didn't want to have that black eye. They didn't want to know that a police officer was fired for stealing or a police officer was fired for domestic violence. But if you're going to say that police officers are people and they're going to make mistakes and there's some people out there that just do dumb things, then I think people accept that. I mean, I think that there's nobody out there that doesn't think that if you have a police department of 200 people on it, that not one of them is eventually going to do something dumb. One of them is not eventually going to be drunk and drive. You know, police officers are people. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm not some type of hero. I do have a heart. I do make mistakes. And if you want police officers to be more human, that we always hear, then I think that we have to be able to realize that that's going to happen. But I think police departments need to be more transparent with that information. And I think that if an officer is arrested, that needs to be public. And I tell people all the time, though, is they'll print a story and they'll say, well, here's a police officer that did XYZ, and here's a dirty cop, and that's the kind of the headline they go with. But a lot of times you don't read the story and realize that that police officer was actually arrested by other police officers. So there are officers out there that are willing to, rat out their other officers or, report them to IA. And I think that we need to, as police officers, push that more. We need to say, hey, their actions are a reaction on us as a career field, as professionals. And be willing to do that. We know that doctors cover up for doctors. There's teachers that cover up for teachers. But as police officers, I think that there's an expectation that we are held to a different level. And if we, as police officers, want to be looked up to, and again, I don't say worshipped or, I don't want bootlickers. We hear that term. If you want to be respected for the job that you do, then I think that you need to be able to perform at a higher level than you might, what might be expected by the public. And I think it does hurt. I think when I read stories or post, I have a lot of Facebook friends are libertarians, and they'll post a story in a heartbeat, of an officer being arrested, and it hurts me because it hurts the image that we present. But for us though, we need to do that. And I think at the same time though, we need to say, hey, as a chief or as a city manager, that if this happens, we're going to make it public. If we fire for someone, we're going to make it public. The stats numbers are going to be available, and have that transparency. And tell people, say, hey, look, unfortunately, we had to hire X amount of people, year to year. We're going to make mistakes and hire some bad people. If something happens, though, we're going to make sure that they're dealt with and that they're going to go through the process like anybody else would. There's this idea that a lot of times police officers cover for, other police officers. And don't get me wrong. I mean, there's times where a police officer is going to pull up another officer and give them a warning just like he will anybody else. But if you catch a drunk driver, then he's a police officer, he needs to go to jail. If you catch a police officer that's been involved in domestic violence, he needs to go to jail. And I think that if we start seeing that more, it kind of contradicts, like you said, the idea that it's a growing thing. And honestly, I think in the last few years, we see a lot more of those arrests. And I think police chiefs are being more honest about them, and I think being more forthright and public with it to try and say, hey, this is what's going on. We are trying to do this right way.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think that is, it is kind of a public image issue, and I think that's probably the best way to handle it. If people started seeing that a lot more, then, they wouldn't hold a grudge so much against, that's one of the things I hear so often is just like, yeah, look at this cop. He planted drugs on somebody, and now he's working for another department, or he murdered somebody, and he's still on the job. But I think if we start seeing, more information about them, the departments are protecting them less, we're seeing them go to jail or charge, as any other person would be for that kind of crime, I think that would change that whole public image a lot and kind of shift things to a lighter side where people are more accepting of what the department has to do or of the good things that they're doing.
And I think, kind of wrapping up on that is a lot of people need to also realize a lot of states have police licensing boards, or for example, here in Missouri, we have a police officer standards and training post. Police officers can have their license removed, and it doesn't have to be a felony arrest. It doesn't have to be a misdemeanor arrest. And those complaints to have that license evaluated or suspended or revoked don't have to come from a police officer or police chief or their employer. Those can come from citizens. So, people who are wanting to look into criminal justice reform and look at the licensing process, look into your state laws, your state process for licensing of police officers, and look and see if there's a police officer involved in something that that he was fired from a department, or let's say he resigned before he was fired and goes to another department. If you think that that was a level of a crime that can get that license removed, and that license is pulled at the state level, he can't work in your state anymore. So, that's to me, that's another good way for people to look at reform measures if you're wanting to look at that issue, to go about doing that.
Right. Yeah, that's a really great point. That's, something that we can do as citizens when the system itself is not working the way it should. That's something that we can do to kind of take action and help that along. So that's awesome. Thank you again for joining. This has been a really awesome talk. I learned a lot of great things. Hopefully everyone has some new information that they can share and kind of see, you know, maybe how we can move forward in I guess, changing the public image of the police, and kind of resolving some of this conflict that we have and how we can move past this and how we can get to the kind of the next level of society that we can, yeah, we can level up from here. Is there any, I want to give you an opportunity if you want to share any websites, anything that, that you want to promote.
Well, the biggest thing for me is if you're interested in criminal justice reform, the biggest one is go to Law Enforcement Action Partnership. There's a lot of subjects that we work on, a lot of national speakers. If you have a Libertarian Party, if you have a Young Americans for Liberty, campus, charter chapter, I went to University of Iowa last year, had a really good turnout. If you have any type of organization like that, there are speakers in almost every state. I'm pretty sure every state now on multiple areas that they can come and talk to as experts. And LEAP speakers are very heartfelt and are very adamant about getting these words out. So go to that website. You can actually look up the public speakers there and email, get on the email list, because a lot of times we'll talk about laws that are being passed in different states that you can get in on, and maybe also, if you live in that state, be part of it. And again, look at things like George Mason University's evidence-based policing. Learn things like that, because a lot of stuff like that are game changers now in the criminal justice field that we can get them implemented. And you, if nothing else, print stuff like that off, send it to your local police chief, or if they have a town hall meeting, take that to them and talk to them about it. See what they know about it, if they have an interest level in it.
Awesome. That's great information. So thank you again. Good luck on your PhD, and will I see you at the convention in May in 2020?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yep. We'll be there and hopefully be part of the Missouri delegation. So if anybody remembers me, come on by and say hello.
Awesome. That sounds great. Well, thank you again, and have a good night, and taxation is theft.
Yes, indeed. All right. Thank you, sir. Good night.
Good night.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads!